You're listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
What's the role of preaching in churches that are filled with life, that are thriving, that have vitality? It's kind of a secret sauce question, right? It's a mysterious question. If we always knew, then maybe we could repeat some of it. Well, the good news is today's guest has done some of that work. Today's guest is Dr. Mark Wilson. Mark is a recent graduate of the Doctor of Ministry program at Wesley Seminary. He teaches in the religion department at Southern Wesley University. You may have heard Mark at a camp or a conference, or perhaps speaking in your local church. He's had a very fruitful ministry of speaking at different places that was really done in connection with such a long run. Mark spent 26 years as a pastor at a local church in northern Wisconsin. Mark is a good friend, and he's somebody I've learned from and appreciated learning from over the years. In today's episode, you're going to hear us talk about preaching. Maybe think about what role preaching has, what role preaching might serve for you and your church. You're going to hear Mark share some of his findings as he studied churches that had life and were thriving, and what role preaching played in their life and the nature of those churches. What were some of the common themes that might even be able to be picked up and replicated by other preachers? Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor, and then enjoy the podcast.
We are Wesley, and you belong here.
I'm Gloria Zikiwe, and I am Wesley.
My name is Chris, and guess what? I am Wesley.
I'm Ryan Wagers, and I am Wesley.
My name is Julius White, and I am Wesley.
My name is Jen Peterson, and I am Wesley.
We recognize this beautiful diversity that the Lord has called together that is Wesley.
My name is Corey Merritt, and I am Wesley.
I am Wayne Brown, and I am Wesley.
I am Colleen Durr, and I belong here. You belong here too, because we are Wesley.
Welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Mark, it's great to have you with us.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Aaron.
Dr. Mark Wilson, it's pretty fresh still. I know that you've made your presentation of the project, but does it still sound pretty good?
Oh, it's fun. Now that I have the doctorate, I thought I could do surgeries and lobotomies and things. I haven't had any takers yet, though.
You've been doing some cardiac surgery for a while. I mean, spiritually, the heart, right? 26 years in ministry and in northern Wisconsin at the same church. You're now teaching. Mark, I had you for one class. I'd just like the listeners to know I had you for one class, and it was a delight. You asked good questions. Your paper was strong. So that's just a delight. And I know that your students at SWU are benefiting from that. And that's part of the reason I wanted you on the podcast, was to have you share about what you researched and found out in your Doctor of Ministry project that you completed for us. So you studied the relationship between preaching and congregational vitality. What is congregational vitality? And what role did preaching play in those churches that were filled with life?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I really enjoyed my studies at the seminary. I learned so much, just so much about preaching and how to hone the craft of homiletics. And so I studied churches that were thriving. And so I had to really define what is congregational vitality, because there are a lot of different definitions for that. And a lot of times people think that just means like worship attendance growth. But there are a lot of shallow places where people are, you know, there's growth numerically. So I did some digging to find out. And basically the way I defined it, because it had to be measurable for my project, the way I defined it, there has to be signs of robust life somewhere. Like, it doesn't have to necessarily be a numerical growth, but if things are moving forward, that's going to be showing out statistically somehow, some way. In fact, there was one researcher who studied different studies of congregational vitality. So like, there's a lot of different studies out there. And so I did a study of all the studies. And what they found was that the one thing that they had in common was that all of them said that some sort of outreach to the community and reaching out to lost, broken, or hurting people has something to do with vitality, and that there are measurable results that will come in some way or another. So I wasn't looking for signs of life, like grandma's in the intensive care unit, and is she living still? That's not the kind of church I was looking for. I was looking for one that very clearly evidence of thriving and vibrancy, outreach, growth in life, and all different denominations. And so I had like the denominational leaders, people that were thought leaders that recommended these churches to me. And so I found 10 different churches in the upstate of South Carolina that fit that description. And what I wanted to find out was two questions. One is preaching a factor in that, or is it something else? And then the second question is, what kind of preaching happens in those churches? So that's really where I went with that, asking those two questions. The answer to the first one is preaching is definitely a factor, 100% across the board. I interviewed pastors. I did a questionnaire of congregants, and they all said the same thing, that preaching was right at the top of the list. Like all 10 of the pastors said that preaching was at the top of their ministerial duties. Now, two of the 10 added something else, but still it was tied, you know, and so all of them put it number one. And, you know, there's a program called Natural Church Development. NCD is this research kind of like survey of church health, and there are different factors of church health that they measure. And they did a study for me for my project. And what they found out through the study that I commissioned with them was the same thing, that those that had the highest levels of satisfaction in the congregation about the preaching in the church, those were the churches that had the greatest numerical growth, and also the churches that had the highest levels of health and growth across the whole thing, all of the factors.
Talk to us a little bit more about these churches. So these were churches across denominations, you said, different sizes as well?
Yeah, different sizes. So yeah, I didn't just do mega churches. So there were, you know, churches of about 100 or so, probably was about the smallest. I can't remember exactly the number, but somewhere in there, to a very, very large church, one of the fastest growing churches in America. Also, I had African-American congregations. I had, mainline churches, Pentecostal, Baptist. I tried to fit it to the ecclesial landscape, so demographically making it fit that as representative as far as my sampling.
Talk to us a little bit more about the preaching happening in these churches. What kinds of preaching was happening, right? There's different churches and that kind of thing, but there's also different styles of preaching, maybe different lengths, different styles, and people might be listening in and saying, okay, maybe my church is vibrant and has life and it could be part of that, but I preach in this way and not that way. Like, did it have to be a certain kind of preaching, or was it a variety of preaching that was making a difference? Talk to us a little bit about that, what you found out.
Yeah, that was really where I was looking for it, like, because these people are so different. So the King James fundamentalist Baptist guy and the Episcopalian and the African-American Pentecostal, their styles were totally different. But yet there were some common themes that emerged. And some of these were surprising. So I thought storytelling, for instance, would come up to the top, but it didn't. I wanted it to, but it didn't. I'm an expository preacher. That's the way I like to do it. And I would say about half of them, that was true, but the other half not. So they don't make the cut. So I was only looking for what are the common threads. Now, I did make general observations along the way, like how long did they preach and were they formal or informal? Like, I just made lots and lots and lots of observations. But then at the end, I boiled it all down to 7 observations that I made of commonalities in the preaching of these churches. And so then what I did with that is I took those 7 things and I'm going to be teaching it to my homiletic students. In fact, I think Friday, they're going to get this. I have already prepped them a little bit for that. So do you want to hear what they are, the 7 things?
Yeah, man, I want to hear them.
Okay, here we go. So the first one is that they all preached with homiletic authority. There was no question that they're speaking with authority for God. They didn't preach with question marks. It was with exclamation point. And I looked at how did they gain authority? Like, how do you get gravitas for preaching? Because they all had it. And I found a few things. The first one was that they all referred to scripture, no matter whether it was Presbyterian or Baptist. scripture was the basis for it, right? And so the scripture itself is the authority. So I can say that to my students. I can say, hey, you don't have any experience, but you've got the scripture, so you're okay. You've got your authority right there. But then there are a few other things that actually can add to that later on, like longevity. These pastors averaged about 12 years. That was the average. And that's double the national average. So I'm figuring that the longevity itself contributed to their authority with the congregation. The congregants talked about their transparency, like how they were vulnerable and they were transparent. And so even in the fact of admitting their own struggles or weaknesses, it actually gave them homiletic authority to speak into the struggles and weaknesses of their listeners. And then the last thing about authority was that they cared. Over and over again, the congregants talked about how much their pastor loved them and cared for them. And I know my pastor loves me. You know, this is even in the mega church where they don't even know the pastor, but the pastor is speaking words of love to them. And there's a relationship between the listener and the preacher that they feel. So homiletic authority is the first one. And then the second thing I found is what I call pastoral understanding. What I mean by that is just name the pain. They named the pain of the listener. And this was like the first big find I found, that they spoke words, they put words to the experiences, the struggles, the challenges that the listeners were going through. They actually said it. And so I asked the pastors about it. How do you know what your listener is going through? How do you do that? And some said that they did this preaching out of their own pain. Or sometimes it's by living life with people and knowing what's going on in their hearts and lives. And then sometimes you can chase down the pain just through the scripture itself, because the scripture speaks about naming the pain. And then after the pain, see, underneath that pain is a problem. And that was the third thing, that they defined the problem. So they spoke with authority, they named the pain, and then they defined the problem. I call that contextualized clarification. They said, okay, you're struggling with this, and this really hurts, and life stinks. And let me tell you why. And underneath is this, and there's a theological problem, and then they define it. And they say, this is the situation, and this is the reason why we're in this mess. They clarify that. And then what they do, number four, the fourth thing is enter the text. They enter the text. And it isn't just explaining the text. This was across the board. All 10 of my preachers, they were more than text explainers. They were spelunkers with the text. They actually took the congregation into the text and brought the text into the lives of the congregation. They figured out a way to do that. So this was fascinating to me. The number one sermon illustration, I thought it would be personal experience. I mean, wouldn't you think, like, I'm telling my story, my kids, this or that? That wasn't the number one illustration. The number one sermon illustration by far, many times over, it was actually the biblical narrative itself. So they would be doing like an epistle of Paul, and then they go back and tell the story of Abraham. They paint the picture with the story. They bring the listener into the story. So it isn't, again, not just explaining the story, but living it out with them, acting it, bringing it into, how do I say, well, entering the text, bringing them into the text. This was huge, I think. It was all across the board. So it wasn't just the Bible church or the Baptists. I mean, the Presbyterians and the Methodists and the Episcopalians did that too. My fifth thing was what I call passionate proclamation. So they spoke it with passion. In fact, passion was an adjective that was used frequently by congregants talking about their pastor. Oh, I love the passion in which he preaches, or she is just the most passionate preacher I've ever met. And they declare it. It's declared, not inquisitive, but declarative. The only time there was inquisitive stuff, and the only time there's questions is to raise it up so you can punch it hard. they preached with a punch, every one of them. And this brings me to number six. And number six is, there's two things, like two skis that I like to think. They preached with double skis. every single sermon, and I reviewed 30 sermons of these, three from each preacher, occasionally, well, actually a few more than that. And then I did 25 of these sermons line by line, actual every single line, saying, what is the preacher doing here? What's the preacher doing here? What's the preacher doing here? And I coded every single line. And the reason why the numbers are different is if they were shorter sermons, I did more than one to so that there would be a statistical balance, right? Because it isn't fair for the long-winded preacher to get more airtime. So the Presbyterian guy, I did more of his, and the Episcopal guy, the Baptists were the long-winded, and the Pentecostals. There's this one guy, by the way, he preached, his average was over an hour. It was like 61 minutes or something like that. And he says, I don't preach 61 minutes. He says, that's not true. I said, well, actually that's what you did. He says, no. He says, I only preach 30 minutes and all the rest of it's altar call. So anyway, the two skis are what I call prophetic challenge and faith inspiration. Or here's the other way I say it, jalapenos and honey. They had jalapenos, challenge statements, to speak truth into their lives, to make them squirm a little bit, to hit them on the head, to say, well, this is what you need to do, and that you think you're getting away with it, but you're not. You know, hard sayings. 100% of the preachers did that. And they also, 100% of the preachers had words of comfort and inspiration and encouragement. So every single sermon had both jalapenos and honey. This goes against what some people like John MacArthur have said about the reason why churches grow in America and are thriving and all of that is because they water it down and give them cotton candy. That's just not true amongst the 10 preachers that I observed. Now this is the upstate of South Carolina. Maybe it'll be different than other places, but the ones I saw, they had plenty of jalapenos and that was good. And the people wanted it. Like, so I asked the congregation about that, and I said, what do you appreciate the most about your pastor's preaching? And they said, because my pastor challenges me. And so I think a lot of preachers, they get scared about challenging people. They don't want to say something too hard. But I think that you speak both. And it always ends with inspiration. So none of the sermons ended with this, you guys are terrible and you stink, and I'm done. No, that's that. No, they gave hope. They put out hope. And then my last thing was they all across the board, except for one exception of one sermon. Okay, so like, and the other sermons from this pastor, he did what I'm saying. All of them but one, they ended with what I call an invitational benediction. The one sermon that didn't, it ended with a summary, but all the rest of them ended up with what I call an invitational benediction. Benediction means words of blessing to the people. Invitational means it's one of three things. It's either get right with God, give it to God, or go be the church, go serve God somewhere. It's one of those three. And every single sermon but one, they landed with that. So those are my findings. That's what I discovered are the common threads of these pastors. And I think that these things are probably true of good preaching anywhere you go. That's my theory.
A couple of them stand right out to me. One, a homiletical authority, right, that you talked about, and how there was a dual approach to that. One was the transparency of the pastor, but also their commitment to scripture, right? That both and deeply embedded in the text and deeply embedded in the context of their church. I thought, you know, you look at Jesus' life, and there was so often people were ascribing authority to him because he seemed to be understanding of where they were as people. And yet he also opened the word to them with authority. And they asked, like, where is this authority, right? Who are his teachers? So that one stands out to me quite a bit. A number of the other ones strike me as being connected with the homiletical plot from Eugene Lowry, like just that ability to bring people into the story, to use the story to illustrate their own lives, to give language either to pain or to problems or to solutions. And I found that really insightful as well. That gets me because I really like the homiletical plot.
Real quick on that, I was surprised that there were so few narrative preachers, though. I would say maybe two or three would be, you know, what Lowry described. But the ones that were the expositors, they still did that, but they did it within a mini context. Yeah, so let's say they're doing an expository three-point alliterated thing. Each point had its own movements within it. So even though those guys would never say that they're narrative preachers, they would say we're expository. They're still doing narrative. They're just doing it within the points of their exposition.
That's really helpful, Mark. And it gives me more to think about, because I remember having a conversation about that with somebody who was another, like yourself, preaching expert. And we were talking about Rick Warren. And I said, Rick Warren's a narrative preacher. He just has 20 narrative sermons, right? He has as many narrative sermons as he does have points, because he draws you in. Like there's a naming of a problem. There's a drawing into the text. And then there's an unfolding of solution that's deeply grounded and present in the text. It's not like his own wisdom that he's importing to it. And so that's really interesting that this practice of these preachers that was giving life was in a sense able to, you know, I'm just kind of riffing on your idea. It's like they were able to name that which was deathly in order to bring life to them, right? In order to challenge them to take steps or actions that would be fitting responses to the life God was giving, to challenge them to give things over to God, right? The source of life. So that's really interesting to me that, you know, you saw that so consistently.
Yeah, I think so. And I haven't thought about Rick Warren being a narrative preacher, but I think you're right. So I think sometimes what we do is we define styles of preaching too rigidly. So like some of the books that I've read on preaching, where they would say expository preaching is the way. In fact, I think I can think of two of them. There aren't very many books about preaching and congregational vitality, hardly any. But those that are, they have different opinions about it. But they say, my way of preaching is the way to do it. And like one is, it was a Presbyterian exposition. And that is a way to do it, but it's not the only way to do it.
John Stott has a great line about expository preaching, that expository preaching is preaching that exposes the text, right? That opens
it.
And so he's got
exactly.
This, I mean, that's such a wide category that you're like, man, there's faithful preaching from the Bible that if it's about the Bible can be done in so many different ways. And if it's from the Bible can be done in different ways. And of course you can do verse by verse in different ways, but I found that was really helpful. And I mean, who's going to argue with John Stott, right? About
preaching. Yeah, you're not going to do. Hey, there's another thing I found when I interviewed these guys, there were some things I wanted to ask them that I couldn't get by my observation of their sermons. For instance, like how much do you, how important is preaching to you? How do you study for your sermons and stuff like that? They average 12 hours a week in sermon prep for a sermon. That's typical. That's, none of them could give me an exact number. Every one of them gave me a range. And I think the reason why they give a range, and I think this is probably true for every preacher, is there are some Sundays where it all comes together really well. And you're like, man, this is easy. And then there are others that's like pulling hen's teeth. And sometimes I know the text so well that it's so easy to just dig right up. There are others where my exegesis takes a lot more work. And then there are also factors of life that get in the way. If you have three funerals in a week, it's going to change your sermon prep. But that's what they averaged wasn't really any more than the national average. What would you think would be the average length of a sermon? I don't want to put you on the spot here, but like if you're talking to future preachers, what do you tell them as far as like what to keep it to, keep
yeah,
it under?
I usually say something like, I'll hedge my bet. So as long as it takes to unfold the passage that you're working with, to drill down, I'd say 20 to 25 minutes. And if you're going beyond that, it better be really good, right? Like if you want to go longer, you've got to be. Yeah. And they're like, well, I know comedians that talk for 45 minutes. I'm like, well, yeah, but people are paying to go see them just to laugh. And they're usually the best ones, right? The best comedians are ones that are talking for 45 minutes or 60 minutes. So anyways, I put it, you know, 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah, that's what I would think too. For these guys, it was 37 minutes. But then when they did a study of all preachers ever, it was the largest preaching study ever. It just came out about a year ago. And you know what the average was? 37 minutes there too. So it was this 37 minutes, for heaven's sakes. But what it is I think there are some really long-winded ones that skew that upward. And I think that those who preach shorter sermons are generally more concise and clear. I think that the longer the sermon, the muddier it becomes. That's the way I notice. I'm not throwing any of my guys under the bus because I love all of my preachers that I studied. This was an appreciative inquiry, so I wasn't coming in to criticize them for preaching long. But the Baptists were, they were like 41 minutes each, both of them 41 minutes. So I had two Baptists. So I think that was interesting too. So maybe it depends on your congregants.
Sure.
The more mainline churches were shorter, and then the Pentecostal churches were the longest ones. I asked them, who influenced you in your preaching? There were two different things that came into play. And what I found was like about half spoke of an individual, like a person, like my childhood pastor or somebody that invested in me, that gave a name of a friend. The other half spoke about people that they didn't even know, but they had read their books. And so their books influenced them, or preachers that are national preachers that they watched preach. Mm. And I think maybe that's helpful for us to take a look at both of these things, to maybe have our own mentors in preaching, homiletic mentors, I guess you could call them, and then look for people who can speak truth into our lives, maybe that we don't even know, but we can read and glean and learn from them. I think it's important to continue to hone the homiletical craft. Not one of them mentioned their homiletics professor. So not one of them mentioned their preaching professor. I hope that changes, at least for my students at Southern Wesleyan. That's what I found.
Mark, you've been all around the United States, other parts of the world, different settings, camps, conferences, academic settings, local church settings. You've met a whole lot of preachers. I know you're an influential voice to preachers. And I'll say in part because anytime I've heard you, you've had a lot of the encouragement, a lot of the honey that you talked about. Just you understand what pastors and preachers go through and you speak meaningfully into their lives. I'd love for you to have that chance right now. We got pastors listening in, lay leaders listening in. What word of encouragement would you have for them? Maybe it flows from your study or maybe it's just something on your heart. Love for you to have a final word of encouragement.
Yeah. Thanks, Aaron. The main thing I say is just stay as close to Jesus as you can. The bottom line of everything is to fill up with the love of Jesus Christ and then live in the overflow. I find that when ministry itself can be depleting and exhausting, but when we serve out of the overflow, he gives us energy to do what we need to do and gives us joy in the journey. When we try to do it in our own strength and power, that's when we get discouraged and defeated and feel like it's an impossible task. It is an impossible task, but with God, all things are possible.
Joining us today has been Dr. Mark Wilson. Mark is a personal friend. He is a recent graduate of Wesley Seminary with his Doctor of Ministry, where he focused on the role of preaching in churches that have vitality. Mark is a professor of religion and teaches in the religion department at Southern Wesleyan University, frequent speaker. Mark, thanks so much for sharing your wisdom, sharing your research with us today. We certainly appreciate it.
Hey, it's great being with you, Aaron. Thanks for inviting me on the program.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You make conversations like this possible. The Wesley Seminary podcast exists to introduce topics and resources for fruitful ministry. And trust we've done just that today. Thanks, Connor, for your production work. Great being a teammate with you. Thanks again, everybody. Trust you all to have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.